There's something very Springsteen and Dylan with a dash of Billy Joe Shaver about David Childers. Now, I tend to visualize what artists might look like when I listen to them. When I listened to David Childers, I envisioned a stocky, bear-like, sweaty, undershirt-clad, chain-smoking, hard-drinking, salt-of-the-earth kind of guy. And I was pretty close. Growing up in the small mill town of Mount Holly, North Carolina, David Childers' parents encouraged him to read and express himself in word and song. I spoke with David recently about his music and his career, and we'll get to our conversation right after we hear I Think I'm Gonna Make It from David Childers and the Modern Don Juans.
They wanna kick my ass. Can't get nobody to cut back on the gas. Bankrupts, they call me like a sweet Elysian field. Step up on the finish line, I'll tell you how I feel. I think I'm gonna make it somehow. Think I'm gonna make it somehow. Think is the think it. Cease your protestation to the dim and dismal dark. On the sun will shine, the less than noon the eye. The wind keeps a howling and the night hawk will fly.
David Childers, welcome to American Soundways.
It's good to be here. I appreciate you asking me to come on.
Well, happy to have you. So tell us, you're from right outside of Charlotte, is that right?
It's a little town called Mount Holly, North Carolina, and it's right outside of Charlotte. It's becoming part of it, really.
David, when did you know you wanted to be a musician?
See, I was sort of a closet player and writer and everything. It wasn't until the early 90s that I started stepping out and going out and performing live for people. I was already in my late 30s by then.
Wow, what made you decide at that point in time to step out and do it?
Well, I'd always wanted to. I'd studied at it. I studied writing. I loved to write. I loved to play music. I loved to listen to music. But I had kids. I had a family to take care of. And I wanted to do something else in my life, too. I just feel like it's a way I give something back to people.
Right. Hey, Dave, tell me what the what's the Charlotte music scene like?
I'm right proud of the music scene here. I would say 10 years ago, if you were going out playing really healthy original music scene here. Probably five or six good venues that support it. Yeah, there's still a pocket, and there's an underground scene here that's right vital. A lot of rockabilly, punk rock, country rock, folk rock, whatever you want to call it. There's every night of the week you can find a show around here.
David, what's next for you?
I'm 53 years old, and I ain't the prettiest looking guy in the world, and I'm just real happy to get to go out and play. We make decent money at it. It's getting better. Money's getting better. We got a lot of really great fans. We play in places where we're appreciated and treated like we matter, where the music's respected. And as far as what's next, I don't know. It just seems to get better and better. I've exceeded my expectations years ago. But, it's all a circus, and I feel very blessed to get to go out and do the music that I do for the people that I do.
Well, listen, Dave, thanks very much for joining us on American Soundways.
My pleasure, and I appreciate you taking time to let people know about us.
Other music notables from the Charlotte area include Wilbert Harrison, who invested $40 in a recording session and in 1959 sat atop of the Billboard pop chart for 12 weeks with his song Kansas City.
Going to Kansas City. Here I come. I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come.
10 years had gone by before Wilbert Harrison staged a comeback with his song Let's Work Together, which has been covered by everyone including Dwight Yoakam, John Mayall, the Kentucky Headhunters, and of course, Canned Heat from 1970. Riding the R&B and rock and roll hysteria of the mid-1950s, Napoleon Brown Goodson Culp, also known as Nappy Brown, churned out a slew of hits, including his 1954 hit, Don't Be Angry.
So, don't be angry.
Nappy Brown stepped out of the spotlight for a number of years, settling down and singing the music that he was reared with, gospel. Nappy was rediscovered in the early 80s and embarked on a successful European career. One of the most popular and influential songwriters and musicians in 50s and 60s country music was Don Gibson. Gibson worked in the textile mills outside of Charlotte. That was when he wasn't washing dishes, driving a delivery truck, or fixing jukeboxes. Gibson's initial success came with his hit song Sweet Dreams. He then went on to compose such country standards as I Can't Stop Loving You and Blue Blue Day. Gibson's songs have been covered by the likes of Roy Orbison, Neil Young, Ray Charles, and Emmylou Harris. Between 1958 and 1961, Don Gibson had 11 top 10 singles on the country charts, including this 1958 classic, O Lonesome Me.
A bad mistake I'm making by just hanging around. I know that I should have some fun and paint the town. A lovesick fool that's blind and just can't see. Oh, lonesome me.
Every so often, a song will come along that can so embellish the attitude of America's youth that it can come to define an entire decade.
I gave a girl a ride in the wagon.
For me, such a song came out in 1975. And by the way, Van Sels went through the roof.
Just like a picture she was laying there, moonlight dancing off her hair. She woke up and took me by the hand. She's gonna love me in my Chevy van, and that's all right with me.
Sammy Johns, an accomplished songwriter and Charlotte native, sold more than 3 million copies of Chevy Van in the mid-1970s. Although there have been a slew of great recordings made in Charlotte over the decades, dating as far back as the Carter Family and Bill Monroe back in the 20s and 30s, there are two recordings that really stand out as milestones. They're from a seminal post-punk alternative rock band from Athens, Georgia. REM, one of rock's most important and enduring bands, first two full-length albums, Murmur and Reckoning, were recorded at Reflection Sound Studios in Charlotte and produced by Mitch Easter and Don Dixon, both native Carolinians. Murmur and Reckoning, both critical successes, helped to define a sound and launch the career of REM, one of rock's most successful bands. At the top of the show, we heard the cut Talk About the Passion from the album Murmur, but this is the song that started it all. I spoke with producer Mitch Easter about his career in the early days of recording with REM. Mitch, could you sense something big musically was happening in the early 80s with REM and the other bands that you were working with?
It was great. I mean, I had been playing in bands and stuff since I was 12, and I was by then in my like mid and late 20s, so it was a long time later, and it was great to see things finally, you know, adding up to something. Nobody quite knows why that happens, why these sort of big cultural things happen, and it just kind of happened in the South here about 1980, you know, and it happened other places earlier, but something happened, you know, and music got interesting again to people. So I saw that for what it was, I think. It's like, all right, this is a great chance. We better jump on it. You know, everybody needs to jump on this while it lasts.
So, Mitch, tell me, first of all, how you met up with REM, especially given that they were really part of the Athens music scene.
The connection was through this guy, Peter Holzapfel, who is a guy from Winston-Salem that I've known for a long time. But he was living in New York then, and REM had already started to play in New York some. So, you know, they stayed at his apartment, and they were just sort of, I think, just sort of talking conversationally about how they were going to go in and record some stuff. And I think Peter just mentioned that I was doing it. And they didn't know me, but, you know, they had maybe heard of me from somewhere. I don't know. But I had just started doing my little garage studio. And that's the kind of place that bands like that wanted to record in. You know, they didn't want to go to mainstream studios. You know, they'd walk into a lot of studios, and the engineer would be like the 70s guy, you know. They would kind of treat them like they weren't very good, you know. And I think they were looking, you know, for a studio that was more kind of had the secret signal that it was not part of that world, you know, and mine wasn't. And so then I got the call, and they showed up, and we did like a weekend.
So they were signed to IRS, and then that's when they wanted you to go into a studio to do the full-length album. Can you describe that a little bit?
Well, you know, I guess at that point my name came back up because they'd had a completely pleasant time working with me. And we were also instructed to go into a 24-track studio, which, you know, at that time there were still 16-track studios to some extent like mine. The nearest 24-track studio that I knew anything about was Reflection, which is how we wound up there. And at that time I also called up Don Dixon and asked him to do it along with me because he worked at Reflection a lot and was really familiar with it.
Explain to me a little bit, Don Dixon, your relationship.
Well, I've known Don since I was like in the ninth grade or something like that, you know, and he's always seemed like a big rock star way ahead of me in terms of what he knew about, you know, especially back then. He was always really good, you know, and his band back then was really impressive, you know, but he was also a nice guy, and I sort of slowly got to know him more and more over the years. I just sort of crossed paths with him a lot, you know. So, you know, he was just always really helpful to me like that. And then when I finally got my little studio going, he brought sessions of his own in and did them there. So that was cool just to work with somebody like that who was experienced.
Okay, so you go into the studio with REM, you record Murmur. You had to be pleased with the results.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I remember that when Murmur was finished, I had a tape of it, and I took the tapes up to New York. I got a ride with some people who were playing a show in New York, and I rode up with them. I had this, you know, pile of tapes, and I had a cassette, and I played it for them. And I was like, well, what do you think, you know? And they all just loved it, and I thought, really? You know, because when you get finished with something, you really don't know how good it is. I mean, you think it's pretty good, but, you know, you're also a little bit, you know, you've just heard it a lot at that point. So that was kind of cool. And then, of course, it got all these great reviews, and it got to be Rolling Stone's Record of the Year and stuff like that. So that kind of vindicated us, and that was kind of cool, you know. And it paved the way for us to do Reckoning without any sort of argument.
Transit. In 1986, country music found a hero when Randy Travis released his debut album. Born Randy Trawick in Marshville, North Carolina, Randy Travis had been brought up listening to Hank Williams, George Jones, and Stonewall Jackson, another North Carolina native, and their influence showed in his music. After a few years of banging on doors, Randy Travis ruled the country charts beginning in 1987 with a streak of 7 straight number one singles that ran through 1989. The 80s also saw college radio darlings Fetchin' Bones flirt with fame. Like their musical counterparts, Hole, L7, and Babes in Toyland, Fetchin' Bones was led by a strong female vocalist and hard-driving guitars. Fetchin' Bones, however, may have been too ahead of their time musically, playing a style in the mid-80s that the world wouldn't appreciate until the early 90s. Fetchin' Bones released 4 CDs before moving on to their next project, Sugar Smack. The latest iteration is a Charlotte band called Snagglepuss, still led by lead vocal extraordinaire Hope Nichols. Another native of Charlotte, although not a musician, bears mentioning mainly because he was a lover of people and a lot of us grew up with him. Traveling the countryside in a mobile home and reporting back on the beautiful simplicities of everyday life. Born in Wilmington, North Carolina, Charles Kuralt, the son of a social worker and a teacher, went on to edit the student paper at UNC Chapel Hill, and then to work at the Charlotte, North Carolina News, where he won the Ernie Pyle Memorial Award for his offbeat human interest columns. At 23 years old, he took a job as a CBS News correspondent, like his idol Edward R. Murrow. In 1967, he began traveling the roads of America, producing On the Road. Over the course of a million miles, Charles Kuralt did pieces on whittlers, farmers, a 104-year-old jogger, a man who lived in a house made of beer bottles, and the owner of the world's largest ball of string. Charlotte, North Carolina's Charles Kuralt was anything but a common man, but that's exactly who he loved.
There is a rhyme by Clarence Day which says what I want to say. Farewell, my friends, farewell and hail. I'm off to seek the Holy Grail. I cannot tell you why. Remember, please, when I am gone, 'twas aspiration led me on. Tiddly, widdly, toodaloo, all I want is to stay with you. But here I go. Goodbye.
Like something uncovered in one of Mr. Kuralt's journeys, my trip to Charlotte not only revealed an area steeped in Southern pride and hospitality, but a past and people incomparably in love with music that reflects and preserves our American work ethic. A very special thanks goes to Andrew Webster for his enormous help with local bands. Tom Hanchett, Wanda Hubicki, Pryson Adams, Mitch Easter, Don Dixon, Jorma Kalkinen, and of course, Abe Reed, Seth and Scott Avett, and David Childers. For more information on American Soundways or any of the artists featured in our shows, visit www.americansoundways.com. Until next time, I'm Trip Clark for American Soundways. Thanks for caring about what you hear.
It's been a blue day. I feel like running away. I feel like running away.